Kavoy Morich on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, let's try this again without the glitches. And something I was just talking about with James first hour, apparently the American Embassy in Moscow issued a warning urging all U.S. citizens still in Russia to flee immediately. Of course, we know a couple of folks, Tim Kirby of Tim Kirby Hardcore, who's been a guest on this program. He's a U.S. citizen, I think also Russian citizen out in Russia, and Riley Wagaman. He's also an American. I'm not sure if he's a Russian citizen, but I think the issue centers around the U.S. embassy's concern that Moscow might not recognize that dual citizens should be exempt from military service. So maybe we'll see Tim or Riley on the front lines. Russia may refuse to acknowledge dual nationals' U.S. citizenship, deny their access to U.S. consular assistance, prevent their departure from Russia, and conscript dual nationals for military service. It's interesting because as an American, as a Croatian-American Mexican myself, here in Mexico, I'm treated as a Mexican. I agreed when I was nationalized that I cannot ask the U.S. embassy for help if I get into trouble in Mexico. I'm dealt before the law. I am a Mexican, so I can't, in most instances, do something like that. But also the flip side is, if I don't think the Mexican government would want to conscript me because of being a dual citizen and that, you know, danger of the split allegiance. So yeah, I don't know, maybe if Russia's desperate, they'll, I think usually most countries, and then if you do, if you have multiple citizenships, if you do join the armed forces of one country, you might actually lose the citizenship of the other country because, you know, you've it's seen as you joining a foreign army. So, you know, if I join the Mexican military, I might lose one of my other citizenships, or vice versa. So it starts to get a little complicated. Biden has approved $1.1 billion more in military aid to Ukraine. Like the Energizer Bunny, it just keeps going. It's absolutely insane. I don't know what to tell you. They are bleeding America dry. Perhaps before the crack up, boom, debt bubble. And I mean, I don't think it's even newsworthy anymore to cover Biden's guffaws. I'm just tired of it. It's been in the news, but I think maybe this is the last time I mentioned it. I think it's pointless. We are in idiocracy. We've got a leader that's, you know, we get the government that we deserve, and it's a sign, you know, maybe of collapse. But while reading remarks during a White House conference on hunger, nutrition, and health, I mean, it's funny that Biden's reading remarks on nutrition and health, but he asked if the late Representative Jackie Walorski was in attendance. Walorski was killed in a car crash last month. And so he's, again, just, yeah, off the rocker. I don't know what you say about that. And Florida's being hit horribly bad by this Hurricane Ian. So for all the people that fled to Florida, you've got your advantages and disadvantages. And one disadvantage is Mother Nature. So you escaped a great reset, but you can't escape Mother Nature. That's the whole thing about digital nomadism, expatriating, pluses and minuses everywhere. Hurricanes versus cartels versus Klaus Schwab technocrats and so on. So choose your battles. And what else do we have going on? Medvedev saying that he doesn't believe the U.S. and NATO would intervene if Russia launched a nuclear strike in Ukraine over fears of a nuclear apocalypse. He reiterated Moscow believes it has the right to use nukes if its existence is threatened. And he says they're not bluffing again. So Let's see what happens after the Nord Stream sabotage and where the nuclear winds will be blowing. Let's hope we don't get there. And let me remind you again, if you have an upcoming community event, rally, march, festival, or fundraiser that could do with some free publicity, TNT Radio wants to promote it for you. Just visit the What's On events calendar at tntradio.live. Submit your event details and we'll try to get the word out on TNT Radio.
Making sense of the stories.
They break down the big story.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. I don't usually do this, so this is something new and fun, something different. It's going to be the Three Musketeers, the three of us today. James from Borderless Blog is still on the line with us, and back with me is Vance from MyLatinLife.com. Since 2014, My Latin Life has been your trusted guide to traveling and living in Latin America. Whether you're interested in second passports, permanent residencies, taxes, digital nomad hotspots, nightlife, city guides, and LATAM travel tips, MyLatinLife.com has got you covered. How are you doing, Vance?
I'm doing well. Thank you for that introduction.
Yeah, good stuff. And James, are you still with us?
I'm here. I'm awake. Just cracked another Modelo.
All right, or mezcal. What's your favorite drink in the Latin America's Vance?
I like a good Malbec from Argentina. I also like mezcal, tequila, pretty much everything. Rum in the Caribbean, anything, man.
Yeah, I like more so the artisanal Mexican beers is mezcal as well. James's friend out in San Miguel does the mezcal stuff. Jonathan Lockwood, he's been on TNT before, and
yeah. Well, you know, how's before when we were out in Guadalajara, you and I, Hervoye, we had some mezcal and stuff. But and you know, I used to do that a lot. I used to drink a lot of mezcal. We get really great artisanal stuff straight from Oaxaca. Really amazing. But actually, I stopped drinking that. It's just so powerful. I drank it for years, but I've been like cutting back a lot lately. So I just completely stopped. I just stopped buying it and stopped having it around me, honestly, because it could just, you know, you get and get away from you. You know what I mean? And it tastes good.
An age too, you know, like I'm finding I can't really drink anymore. But just on the speaking of alcohol, I just found this hilarious when I was hanging out with some Mexican friends. I think this was last year, and you said Modelo, right? So you have Grupo Modelo, which is like the big brand of beer. I think they own Corona and Modelo and other such stuff. And they've got these like they look like hangers around town. Have you seen those? It's like half a beer can.
Yeah,
that's the building looks, a small building looks like half of a beer can, and it's like a hangar. You drive in and you got all the beer, and they've got an app now where you can just order. They've got little stations all over the place, and you can just order like a six pack and it'll get to you like in 5 or 10 minutes. Have you guys seen that?
Yeah, on Rappi and a couple of those delivery apps. I think that's one of the actually the benefits of Latin America is you can actually get decent alcohol delivery, especially after hours, something that in Canada definitely can't happen. I think it's coming more to the States, but it's pretty developed in Latin America, alcohol delivery.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, just any kind of food delivery. I see neighbors, they get their breakfast delivered, lunch, dinner, beer. I think we talked about this before, James, even the auto parts in Mexico shop was trying to get an app to deliver you auto parts like quickly. So in some ways, Latin America is advancing, as you said, Canada or US in these terms. But
yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. Like I remember in Medellin, you know, Medellin, that's when I first used Rappi, and it was like changed my life. You know, that was the first time I'd ever experienced that before. And you could like they have everything that was at the grocery store, you could just, you know, flip through all the different selection of lettuce or, you know, beer or whatever it is. And you pick it and it'll, you know, come to your house in 20 minutes or so. You could get meat from the butcher. You can get money, Like you can get them to take money out and it'll come, you know, they'll come to your work. They could come to your house and just deliver you like a big stack of cash. And it was kind of funny because, you know, a lot of the guys are like dating on, you know, like Colombian Cupid or Tinder or whatever. And then they, you know, like send an Uber to go get their date. And then they'll go send a Rappi to go get their food. And they just like never have to leave their house, even for dates and like for food or anything.
Yeah, they'll be creating the ultimate. They'll be creating the ultimate job of the huts. You know, just
everything can be delivered.
Yeah, crazy. I was going to ask you, Vance, as I've been chatting with James for an hour, but maybe to get into some of the things you're most passionate about in terms of Latin America or digital nomadism or expatriation, or maybe just some of the things you've been researching or getting into lately. And then, you know, James and I can add in our 2 pesos. I last week when we chatted, I enjoyed, we talked a lot about the multiple passports. Apparently now you can become a Russian mercenary for a year and get a Russian citizenship. So there's that. What's some of the stuff you've been looking at?
Yeah, I think there's so much stuff. I think territorial tax countries come to mind. I think it's just such a superior tax system where you're only basically taxed for the money that you bring into the country, and money that you earn offshore is not taxed and does not need to be reported. And so it's a very, I think it's like one of the major trade-offs in Latin America, where the big 4 countries are, in terms of popularity and economy, are, you know, Mexico, Colombia, Brazil, and Argentina. And none of these are territorial tax countries. They're old-fashioned residency-based taxation countries. And if you're a resident and you fit pretty loose requirements, you're taxed on your worldwide income. But there's a lot of spots out there that are territorial tax countries. I'm thinking about Central America, the Caribbean, Paraguay, Ecuador, Uruguay, things like that. And these are places where you can potentially live year-round and not pay any tax, pay 0% tax. So I think that's a very interesting trade-off that we need to think about in Latin America.
Yeah, I think, James, you've had some experience with this, no? I mean, anything interesting from your viewpoint on that?
No, I mean, he's got it. He's, you know, Vance has been doing a lot of research on that kind of thing lately. You know, as I've transitioned into more of the expat thing, I see that he's still out there investigating kind of all Latin America as far as digital nomadism and things like that. So he's definitely got a grip on that.
Yeah. And I know for US citizens, for example, I've seen you tweet it, and I've been dealing with this for years. For example, if I'm a US citizen, for example, living in Mexico or Colombia, you have the foreign earned income exclusion up to 100. I think you posted the latest is $112,000, which, I mean, I don't have to worry about because, you know, I don't get close to that. But so from the US standpoint, I would owe the US government nothing, right?
If you're outside the country, sure. But yeah, there's so many factors at play. It's hard to say that definitively. And then, you know, it just makes me think about, I think a lot of expats do want to end up spending time in those big 4 countries, probably specifically Mexico and Colombia. And they're just like, expats are just sort of battling with this idea of like, how can I spend time in Mexico and Colombia without paying tax there? And specifically, how could I potentially spend more than 6 months there without paying tax? And it's a little bit different in Mexico and Colombia. They have different, you know, definitions of things. And Mexico is a little bit more of a gray one. And, you know, I think I enjoy hearing more and more anecdotes about how people are addressing it, because it's a very interesting definition of Mexico. I think we're talking about Mexico a lot on this program. I didn't hear the last hour, but obviously, you know, James lives there and everything. And so, I'm continuing to try to figure out how it might be possible to structure things to live more than 6 months a year in Mexico and feel comfortable from a tax perspective.
Yeah, it's interesting. And the laws are always changing, and they are you know, making digitalizing things with the tax offices. And yeah, something one has to stay up to date with. I think we'll take our first break here now. Again, James's website is borderlessblog.com and Vance's is mylatinlife.com. We'll be right back on TNT.
TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
You have videos of US President's son, Hunter Biden, obtained by the Daily Mail. Joe Biden's son, Hunter, slides naked down a water slide, has copious group sex with prostitutes, dances around naked, inhales drugs, you know, on and on and on it goes. This is the son of President Biden, caught out. He strips, snorts, and skinny dips his way through a series of $4,000 a night plus rentals in Malibu in September and October of 2018. $4,000 a night. And of course, Hunter Biden, he can afford it. I mean, he was certainly well rewarded in many of his hedge fund and other business dealings, including the generous pay packet from being on the board of Burisma Holdings in Ukraine. And there are many, many questions about his business dealings there.
Jeremy Beck on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Government today.
They're not human. They ought to be destroyed.
It's like all the children from the Village of the Damned grew up and went into politics.
You can't stop us, you know.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
We're back with James Guzman of jamesguzman.com and Vance of mylatinlife.com. Both excellent resources if you're thinking of up and going to Latin America. You can look at both of their websites, consult with them. I've got my flag planted here, but maybe just to bring up the issue of politics, you know, I'm just curious. We've got on some of your thoughts, you know, whatever they are. We've got Lula versus Bolsonaro now in Brazil. Apparently, Lula has widened his lead over Bolsonaro. We had Gustavo Petro in Colombia win. We've got the Croatian-Chilean Boric, Marxist in Chile, wanting to take away everyone's guns and put in the new constitution, which failed. What's sort of your overall picture on the politics in the Latin American space?
James, do you want to go first?
Oh man, we've talked a lot about that, Hervoy. I think we talk about that every week. I think that you're probably right. I mean, looks like Lula's, as far as Brazil goes. I think that's unfortunate. I did see this this recent hit piece that Reuters put out, and they were saying that all of a sudden it was a bank robbery, that they were supposedly, you know, they were using these guns that they had gotten legally because of Bolsonaro's policies, and that there were all these criminals that are running around with guns. But you can obviously see the trend that homicides and all violent crime has been cratering since Bolsonaro has done the reforms as far as that goes. And, you know, the rest of these people want to do the opposite. So that sucks. And, you know, I watched this the UN speech by Petro the other day. I thought I'd give him a chance to see what he has to say. I watched the one by Bukele also. And Petro, you know, like he was talking about the cocaine plants and all this and, you know, it stopping the drug war. And yeah, for ending the drug war again, that's something we talk a lot about. But then he's just always comparing it to oil and climate change. You know, that was his whole thing is like, we need to stop the drug war because of climate change. And it's just so lame, you know? I can't remember whatever the other stuff, but everything else other than like the drug war stuff, I thought was dumb. And then Bukele, I wasn't very impressed with his thing either, honestly. He was talking a lot about how they need to have more, like technology and young people involved in governance, and they need to have more like of these, like, you know, the college things where they go to a college and they pay the money to solve some bureaucrat problem or whatever. and he was talking about it like it was something that's new. I mean, they've been doing that for a long time and it's always corny and like it doesn't really come to good solutions. You know what I mean? Like it's just they give them some money and they give them a pat on the back, but that's not like they don't understand how politics really works when you just go to like some, you know, freshman in college that's never even had a job and try to get them to solve this giant problem, especially when they cloak it in like these underlying things like climate change and you know, diversity or, you know, whatever. A lot of times they put feminism and stuff in there. And, you know, like, oh, how do you, you know, like they did over there at your old college, Ervoyer, and they're like, how do we introduce a CBDC that will be effective with climate change and be diverse so that we can, you know, nudge everybody in the right way to, you know, that's not solving problems. I mean, this is stupid. So I don't like all those things that Bukele was talking about, unfortunately.
Yeah. I had forgot. He's sort of dropped off my radar. I forgot about him until you mentioned him, I guess because Bitcoin has lost its luster at the moment. And so, yeah, I mean, what are some of your just general thoughts, Vance?
Yeah, I think I had a quote that or a tweet that people picked up on a bit that was that socialist governments are good for digital nomads. And the reason is that anytime a socialist government gets elected, the currency immediately drops in value relative to the US dollar. And so the country basically just becomes cheaper for digital nomads and expats. Obviously, long term, you know, you're going to want a fiscally responsible government and all that. But in terms of like the short term, 3, 6 months, 1 year, socialist governments actually work out much better for expats and digital nomads. Things basically just get cheaper. We've seen that in Colombia. We've seen that in a bunch of different places. So it's kind of a funny knock-on effect that most people haven't considered.
I never thought about that. That's an excellent point. Though here in Mexico, I guess, you know, go ahead.
Another thing I would add in there is, you know, it's been amazing how the dollar has just like been surging and surging and surging. And it continues with this, you know, the narrative of like the safe haven. And, you know, like me, I was like 12 years ago, like, no, the dollar is done. Put everything in gold. This is all, you know, the whole thing is going to, I was, you know, working for Peter Schiff and on that whole train. And it's just amazing how even now, you know, like you said, it's actually almost $80 billion, I believe, with this newest package going to Ukraine. They got, you know, all kinds of unfunded liabilities, just crazy. And everybody continues, you know, all these foreign countries continue to buy the dollar. And I think that's kind of an interesting maybe black swan or something that people haven't thought of is what happens if the dollar just keeps surging and surging. I mean, it's good for people like us, but it could really have some negative consequences, even for people living in the United States and, you know, other countries too, trying to trade. But it's just amazing that I think there's a lot of off the books money as well that they still just whenever there's risk, they want those stacks of Benjamins, you know what I mean? And that's like all the people in the world, that's what they still go for.
Yeah, that's sort of that.
Yeah, I think if you see a socialist government get elected, basically that currency is going to drop by like 10% overnight. And you're just like, sick, like time to book my flights.
Right.
Yeah. I also wonder about the Brent, was it Brent Johnson, the milkshake theory? So as you're saying, yeah, the dollar goes up, but then at one point does the dollar itself blow up again? Nobody knows. It's like the game of musical chairs. And we're going to jump to our news break. We'll be right back.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Hurricane Ian rapidly intensified off Florida's southwest coast Wednesday morning, gaining top winds of 155 miles per hour, just shy of the most dangerous Category 5 status. North Korea's test fired two more missiles the day before Vice President Harris goes to South Korea. Russia is preparing to annex four more areas of Ukraine its troops took control of during the invasion, following a referendum vote that the U.S. claims is a sham.
Did you know there are many ways you can listen to TNT Radio? Why not stream us direct from our website on your desktop, tablet, or mobile device? Or download our app from the App Store. We even stream live on YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. We've got you covered on TNT Radio.
Some great tweets over at on Twitter at My Latin Life says, move to Latin America to double your standard of living, half your cost of living. So true. And you also say your ancestors didn't die for you to spend your entire life in a 5-mile radius called your hometown. And for people who are happy with that, that's great. And it's also, you know, fascinating traveling. And now that things seem to be opening up in terms of the COVID-1984 medical tyranny, I'm considering doing a bit more traveling. James and I were talking last hour about the increased connectivity. For example, Mexico, they might be opening direct flights between El Paso, Texas, and Mexico City in Guadalajara. Panama is introducing new routes to Mexico, so it'll just be easier to get around. And, I'm just curious about some of the interesting places both of you have been in Latin America. I want to go to Cuba. I haven't been yet, but, even Venezuela, like interesting, edgy spots. I don't know if either of you have been to Venezuela and, what it's, can we just go without a problem, or, what are some of your thoughts about doing travel around Latin America?
Yeah, sure. I can go. I personally have not been to Venezuela, but the OG Vance, the original writer on My Latin Life, has, and we have a couple Venezuela city guides on our site. It's interesting you bring it up, because even just today, we were talking about Venezuela on Twitter a little bit. And we're talking about real estate investment potential in Venezuela, because it really seems like the country is opening up a lot. Just this year, I'm hearing a lot more chatter from people that were related to traveling to Venezuela. I know a couple people there right now through Twitter and whatnot, and they seem to be enjoying it and being able to get by, relatively well. I think. There seems to be, Caracas is a different story. It's definitely pretty crazy. But on Margarita Island, and then also in Merida, in sort of the mountains, it's like a student town. Those two regions seem to be pretty chill. And there seem to be foreigners coming back for the first time. And honestly, I'm starting to hear more and more where the sort of more adventurous LATAM travel guys are starting to finally go back to Venezuela. Because it's a country with really like unlimited potential. And all it takes is maybe a couple announcements from the government saying that they're opening up and the price of real estate's going to double. Any investments you might have are going to do well. Right now, I'm hearing a lot, and I've seen a lot that you can buy, oceanfront real estate for $30,000. You could buy an apartment on Margarita Island, looking out over the ocean, some of the best beaches in the world for $30,000 US. So definitely something that a lot of us are keeping our eye on.
Yeah, James, what do you think? Have you been to Venezuela?
No, man, no. I don't know. Maybe the closest I've been to Colombia is Colombia. I have not been to Venezuela, man. But I've heard for years people, that's been the idea is, to get in there as soon as they start opening up. And I mean, yeah, that's where all the opportunity is, where all the risk is, right? So if you can get in the beginning when It's kind of hard to get on the ground floor. The problem with a lot of these really socialist places is that normally when they open up, they have a way to pass it off to their cronies, like all the really prime companies, real estate assets, et cetera. And that's usually how it happens. So if there's a way that you can get in on the ground floor, then just like the cannabis industry that's opening up in Mexico, if you can get in on the ground floor, then you're golden.
Yeah, I think back I'd in feel the day, safer okay. investing in Venezuela than in the cannabis industry in Mexico.
why is that?
Cartel stuff.
I was telling James that last hour because we brought up how former President Vicente Fox, I mean, he's really pushing it. That's his like shtick now, his way of he wants to make money where. Yeah. And I had on the program some months back on TNT, Luis Armendariz, who's a lawyer in Mexico working on the legalization of cannabis. He says it's going really slow. I was joking with James, though, because Vicente Fox said, well, you know, all the good that's going to happen is they're going to take away the profits from the cartels if they legalize marijuana, and you'll have all these, you know, business owners who are legally growing it. And I just said, well, you know what's going to happen? The cartels are just going to whip right back around. And okay, they're not growing the marijuana, but they're just going to demand the piso, you know, the cartel tax to the new, you know, legal business owners. They'll just demand 10, 20, 30%. And if you don't pay it, they'll take you out. So, yeah,
it's crazy. I mean, you guys are probably obviously both familiar with Jim Rogers, the famous adventure.
You know what's investor, so funny? Right? I was literally just going to mention him I've interviewed him on my Geopolitics and Empire podcast, and I was going to just what you were talking about Venezuela. I was literally going to say because he's a guy that does that. He goes to North Korea, and I don't know how he does it, but he's invested in North Korea. And I was just going to say I lived in Kazakhstan, and I was considering opening a stock account there, but was unable to because COVID, and we just fled. But and he had emailed me, Jim Rogers, that I think I had interviewed him from there, and he told me he was very keen on Kazakhstan. But what were you going to say about Jim Rogers?
Yeah, like you said, he's very interested in all frontier and emerging markets, and he's definitely mentioned Venezuela quite a few times, you know, across various podcasts. But one thing he mentioned, and I haven't personally looked up on this, but he said something like, same thing as North Korea. He said, like, I would love to invest, but as an American, we can't invest in Venezuela. And I haven't followed up on that to actually look at the rules, because I think we're all Americans on this radio, but I don't know if we can actually invest or if we're going to need to set up some sort of like structure. It would be interesting to know a little bit more of the details.
I don't know the rules. I haven't looked into this, but what if we have a spouse that's not an American? Could she invest? Do you know?
That should work.
So yeah, I don't know how that works.
I don't think there are any rules. That's kind of the point, is it's like lawless and they can just take your shit. So that's why it's like, you know, if it did work out that you kept it, then you'd probably make a ton of money. You know what I mean? But that's kind of the problem.
Or use, like I said, yeah, as you're right, we're all Americans. But as I mentioned before, I've got also Croatian and Mexican citizenship. So I don't know how that works. If you open up the business as but again, as an American, you're required to report from, you know, even if you live on Mars or Antarctica, you have to file your, you know, tax reports. And yeah, maybe turning to something a bit more benign, just getting your thoughts on, for people thinking about coming to Latin America, learning Spanish. I think it's one of the easiest languages to learn, although it took me a good 2 to 3 years because my work was all day, every day in English with English coworkers, my students in English. So it just took me longer. And I'm the kind of person where I tried taking classes for like 2 or 3 weeks at the local university and they were useless for me. I'm just kind of the person who learns by osmosis, where just throw me into the country. And, you know, after a year, you know, I did Peace Corps Mongolia, and in 6 months I was intermediate. Of course we had the amazing Peace Corps language training for 3 months, but I just sort of learned it over time, just hanging out with all Mexican friends and making a fool of myself on a number of occasions, and What's sort of the approach either of you have towards learning Spanish?
If you want, I can go first. So I am Puerto Rican. Do you know what I mean? So my dad's from Puerto Rico. So on summers, I would go to Puerto Rico and, you know, family members, and my grandmother doesn't speak English. So I'd live with her. So, you know, I guess that's immersion. And speaking with family members and stuff like that. And but, you know, the thing was, is that, you know, I grew up with, when you learn Spanish in like Brooklyn or Bayamon, Puerto Rico, it's like, you know, it's like street Spanish. It's like learning English in Arkansas or something, right? And so I wasn't really happy with the way I spoke Spanish. So that was one of the reasons that I chose to go to university in Madrid, because I figured, well, if I could learn like better proper Spanish, then I would do it there. So then I was 3 years in Madrid and been in Mexico over 10 years. So if I didn't speak good Spanish by now, that would be pretty pathetic. So yeah. And, you know, I speak Spanish with my wife and all that. So, but yeah, for other people, I would say, here's what I say. It's just like everything. It's like, if you're serious about it, then get a coach or, you know, a teacher, and you need someone that's going to hold you accountable. And you need to be serious about it, you know, because you can just, you see a lot of people that just play around and say, oh yeah, I need to learn that one day. But, you know, if you say, look, I need to learn Spanish in a year, I need to be conversational, and I'm going to, you know, pay someone 2-3 times a week, and we're going to go over, you know, for an hour each of those times. And then, you know, I'm going to practice in my time off, and I'm going to be conversational at the end of it. That's how you get things done, whether it's, you know, whatever it is in your life. If you're really dedicated to it, then you know, if you have to, then you got to do something like that and have somebody that's going to hold you accountable.
Mm-hmm. And James, if you don't mind me asking, does your wife speak good English?
Well, that was actually one of the things when we got engaged. I said I wanted her to, you know, learn good English. I mean, she speaks pretty good English, but, you know, we always improve, you know, I learn vocabulary words, and she improves her English and stuff like that. She's also learning. She got I helped her with a job also that's basically like an online job where it's in English. So that's helping her as well.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I had a different experience because I didn't grow up with any Latino blood. So this is something that came to me later in life. For me, it really just kind of came through girlfriends and having a lot of girlfriends that didn't speak English. Yeah. Obviously, some were more bilingual than others, depending on, you know, the country and stuff like that. Got to learn kind of different accents in different areas of Latin America. I wouldn't say I'm like 10 out of 10, but I mean, my current girlfriend doesn't speak a word of English other than like, thank you. So that definitely helps a lot.
Yeah. That's especially if you're single. That's like, I think that's one of the best strategies, you know, just get like girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, that doesn't speak your language, and you're going to be forced to have to communicate. And so, you know, I think that's a great strategy, and you get a hot Latin girlfriend. So win-win.
Exactly. I think, you know, and if you look at it, if you go on like iTalki or one of these websites and you want to, you know, pay to talk to someone on Zoom, it's going to be like $7, $10 an hour, where you can just go out in Latin America and have dollar beers on a date, and it's going to cost you less than a Zoom lesson. So guys, just dates every night is a lot better than practicing on Zoom or whatever.
And as James put it, I agree that there's two camps of people, those that play around in terms of learning Spanish and those that just take it seriously and just do it. I mean, I've met Americans here in Mexico. I met one guy, total like typical American, and been here for a decade, and he's married to a Mexican and has Mexican kids, you know, half Mexican, half American, and doesn't really speak Spanish. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, come on. I mean, you know, at that point, you really should be speaking.
It's Spanish. Just purely a mindset thing. There's no reason. There's no reason. I think it's just really a mindset thing. And they always say that the first second language is the hardest. And so for me, I actually learned French first as an adult living in Montreal. And so I kind of developed a bit of a method that worked for me for learning languages. And then when I learned Spanish, it came easier just because I mentally was over the handicap of speaking in a foreign language. And I just knew that if I practiced an hour a day, if I kept reading, if I kept listening, I just knew I would just keep getting more and more fluent. And so I think if you have that belief and you're putting in the effort, like it's literally guaranteed. It's just like going to the gym. If you just lift things up and down for an hour a day, like right. You're going to get jacked. Exactly. You don't need the best technique. You don't need this and that. You know what I mean? If you just literally go to the gym for an hour a day, you're going to get jacked. And I think it's really the same thing with language learning.
Yeah. And I was looking for some hacks when I was learning languages. And did you guys ever come across Benny Lewis of Fluent in 3 months?
Yep.
Yeah,
that's one of my first inspirations, actually.
Yeah, he's got some fascinating stuff. And also, James, I just thought to mention, this was just funny. You told me I had on last week on TNT of Students for Liberty, Dr. Wolf von Lehr, and you were laughing that, I mean, you knew him when you were in Spain back in the day, no?
Yeah. Man, it's so funny, like just the world, you know, like watching how, where people go, you know, and yeah, so Wolf von Lauer, we actually started, so when I was in college in Madrid, you know, I was renting, this wasn't a big place, and I forget how we became friends, but he actually like was like sleeping on my floor, and we started this club together where it was every other week we would do an economics club. And it was funny because they were all students of Jesus Huerta de Soto, who's like this economist that people come from all over the world to go to. And there was all PhD students. And I don't know, maybe this is going to get too boring, but the point is that we would host these economics club meetings every other week, every other week. And then he was hooked in with Students for Liberty in the United States. And we said, well, we could just call it Students for Liberty Europe or something. And we'll just, you know, we'll tell people that it's Students for Liberty Europe. And so we put a little thing on our flyer. And so we started this group and it started getting pretty big and all that. And then when I left, I just left it with them. I was like, okay, well, here you go. It's kind of a meetup. You know what I mean? By the way, I always start meetups. I don't know why or whatever, but when different places that I stay in, I usually start meetups just to meet other cool people, and it's just an easy way to do that. But anyways, and it kept going, and he is the president of European Students for Liberty, or maybe the whole Students for Liberty. I'm not sure.
No, I think it's like the whole, really high up. Yeah. The whole Students for Liberty.
And European, so we were the first European, we were the first European Student for Liberty chapter, and it's all over Europe now, and he's now the president of the whole thing. So that's funny.
It's persistence, you know, that's what happens when you persevere. We're gonna jump to our last break. Again, the websites are borderlessblog.com and mylatinlife.com. We'll be right back on TNT.
How is that green energy transformation working for you? Energy chaos descends upon the world.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Yahoo Finance is reporting this week that firewood is the new gold in Europe. Prices and theft jump in Europe as Russia's gas cutoff boosts wood demand ahead of winter. 1,000% increase in EU energy prices. The New York Times is reporting that, quote, crippling energy bills are forcing European factories to go dark. Due to the shortages and high cost of energy, manufacturers are furloughing workers and shutting down lines because they can't pay gas and electric charges. Makers of metal, paper, fertilizer, other products that depend on gas and electricity are now being shuttered in Europe. Half of Europe's aluminum and zinc production taken offline. But don't worry, I'm sure China and India will be able to fill this manufacturing void. This, my friends, is the Great Reset in action. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Hi, my name is Marnie Dobek. I'm a family physician, and my son Zachary almost died of sepsis last year. We were lucky. Most people don't know the word sepsis, and they don't know the symptoms. Protect yourself and your loved ones. Know sepsis. To learn more about the symptoms, please go to sepsis.org.
The Green New Deal supports the abuse and murder of children in the Congo, mining for cobalt for the electric vehicle. We mandate that the truth be told. TNT Radio.
All right, on our final stretch with James of borderlessblog.com and Vance of mylatinlife.com, great resources for those people looking to remake themselves in Latin America or find a good-looking spouse or just, you know, look for good food, better economic opportunities or escape the Great Reset. But don't be fooled, you know, that the Great Reset is global, so it's even advancing here, but maybe we'll just take longer to lock itself into Latin America. I did want to just bring up real quick beaches, because I saw over at My Latin Life, you were recently talking about best beaches in Panama post. And, you know, for me, coming from Croatia, I like my Croatian beaches because the water is cold. It's very clean and very still water, not very many waves. In Mexico, the waves are often too big, either on the west or east coast, and the water is too warm, but you can still find nice spots. And I have been to Costa Rica, where they also have good water. What's been some of your, both of your experiences in terms of beaches around LATAM?
I think I would just say it's very important to time the seasons, especially in Latin America. And you really need to consider sort of the dry season, the wet season, and when you go. Because I think the biggest mistake that I see travelers make, and I get DMs like this all the time, and they say, hey, I'm booking a flight to Cancun, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, it's July, man. You don't go to Cancun in July. I think I would just be sure to time the seasons. And even on the Pacific side of Mexico, the waves are sort of like different heights depending on different times of year. So there's like a surfing season and a non-surfing season, etc. So something to consider.
Yeah, for sure. That's good advice. When I was growing up, I spent a lot of time in Puerto Rico. Also, when I was in the Navy, we used to go to Curaçao, St. Thomas. Then I lived in Barbados, St. Vincent, other places like that. And with the Caribbean, you really get spoiled with beaches. They're really some of the most beautiful beaches. Clear water, white sand, and that kind of stuff. But it really depends on what you want. If you want like a surfing village, you want, you know, the, like a big party town. And again, you got to think about the seasons. If you want it really hot or, you know, just kind of like nice restaurants. But, you know, Mexico, everybody knows Mexico has all kinds of different beautiful beaches. We usually go to Sayulita, Puerto Vallarta, because it's a good, if we want to drive, we can easily drive there, take a pit stop in Guadalajara. And that's always a lot of fun. We find Sayulita to be really nice. It's got a cool kind of fishing village vibe, but at the same time, now it's been getting a lot of tourists lately, but got some nice restaurants, things like that. And I guess Puerto Vallarta has been getting very popular lately. A lot of people from around the world actually moving there. So I lived in Acapulco for 2 years directly on the beach, and that was just like nuts. I wouldn't really recommend that. There's beautiful beaches all over Latin America. It's just, you know, another one that a lot of people like to go to is Puerto Escondido, Mazatlan, and all kinds. There's just so many, and they're, you know, much less expensive, obviously, down there than you would get in a lot of, you know, say like Miami or something. So yeah, it's definitely worth checking out.
Turning the page a bit, Vance over at My Latin Life on Twitter says, good countries can go bad very quickly. You cannot rely completely on any one country. We've seen that the past 2 years. Canada went bad quickly, and many have been a record. Yeah, actually, it is China. Just an example that recently they come to mind. So I just want to get your further thoughts, both of you, on internationalization, principles. There's different things to talk about here, but just one recent example. I was in Croatia. I've got a Croatian bank account. I've got an account in Mexico. And often you have trouble, like if you need to pay for stuff online, the travel ticket or something, sometimes, you know, one card doesn't work. It's really frustrating. And, you know, I managed to get, you know, I needed to purchase a local flight in Croatia. And one of my cards, it just wouldn't work. And luckily, because I'm a Croatian, I have a Croatian account, I used my Croatian card and I was able to, no problems, you know, buy the card. And so that's just like, you know, one example of internationalizing, having different bank accounts where sometimes you'll get stuck. If you only have like one US account or from whatever country, it might be wise to open different accounts so you can have just a smoother process overall. You know, what are some, you know, things when you think about in terms of, as you say, good countries can go bad very quickly, and so some principles of diversifying and making life easier if you have to move around and escape.
Yeah, I think one thing to think about is you can almost think of the world as different trade blocks. And so you have, you know, sort of a Caribbean trade block, also called the CARICOM. You have the NAFTA trade block. You have the Mercosur in South America. You have the Andean community as well. Obviously, you have the Eurozone, African Union, you know, former USSR places, and so on. And so there's all these different trading blocks. And I think when people think about building a passport portfolio or internationalizing, is to try to get a little bit of a toe into a whole bunch of different trading blocks, just so that you sort of like have exposure to these different economies that in some ways can operate in a vacuum, and sort of you can diversify your exposure that way.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, let me say something about that. So, yeah, I think you're talking about kind of plan B or escape route or something like that. So, you know, a lot of people when they move down to Mexico, you know, they're like, well, I want to take my money out, especially Canada. A lot of Canadians come down, they want to take their money out of Canada. And then since they're living in Mexico, they want to, you know, open a Mexican bank and put it down here. That's not the way you should look at it. So, you know, again, I think, you know, at least we are familiar with the flag theory, where you kind of think strategically about all the different jurisdictions that you have your residency, have your citizenship, have your banking account, have your assets, things like that. And so, you know, when if you want to get your money out of Canada or wherever it is, or the United States, then you want to look at, you know, some better jurisdictions. You want to look at jurisdictions that have, you know, good banks, good banking regulations, or, you know, whatever it is that you're looking for, or have, you know, the currency that you want to invest in. You know, if there are some fintech online banks that maybe will give you access to. And there are also new types of investments, where it's like crowdfunding real estate, all kinds of things that you can do online, or maybe you want to, you know, invest in these I bonds. A lot of people are buying these days. So you can take your savings and do that instead of just saying, oh, I want to have it sit in a Mexican bank, because honestly, I wouldn't trust any amount of you know, a significant amount of money in just sitting in a Mexican bank. There's no reason to do that. I've known of instances where a Mexican bank is, or a person in the Mexican bank has stolen money out of the bank, the people directly out of their accounts, and then they just have zero balance, and the Mexican authorities are just kind of, you know, shrug, and they didn't really do anything at all. It was amazing. So I wouldn't, you know, recommend doing that. If, you know, you can just open up any bank and it really doesn't matter, because all you're going to do is you're going to be taking out from where it is that you receive your money into a bank account here or wherever it is that you are. And you're just going to take that cash out right away. That's the reason that you're putting it in there. So you're not using it to hold money or anything like that. And so it's really insignificant, you know, how good the bank is or whatever, because, you know, you're not keeping anything over a few thousand or something like that over in there anyways. And yeah, just think strategically about what investments you want to use, how to diversify yourself with different countries. If you're into stocks, maybe you want to look at international stocks as well. Another thing, if you're thinking about a plan B, is, you know, if you have real estate overseas, maybe having, you know, some secret place in there that you can have cash, or you can have precious metals and another copy of your passport or something like that. Or a lot of people are using, you know, safe deposit boxes and other things like that. So you can think about that strategically. Well, if that's what you're worried about is having to get out in a hurry, that you could have things in different parts of the world where you have, you know, because another thing, just if you're going to have it sitting in a bank, you might as well just have like stacks of cash of different, you know, currencies sitting somewhere. It's the same thing.
All right, we're out of time. Thank you both for joining me. It was a lot of fun. Vance is over at mylatinlife.com. Check it out. Follow all of the socials if you're interested in coming to Latin America, as well as James over at borderlessblog.com. Both of you enjoy the mezcal or rum or whatever it is you'll be sipping on. That's it for me today. Keep on rocking in the not-so-free world here on TNT Radio.